Joining us now, Michael Raff from the Gordon Law Group. Michael, so great to chat with you here. Thanks for coming in on this gorgeous day.
Thanks so much for having me back, John.
Isn't it easy to walk through our city on a day like this?
What a beautiful November treat we have. It's sun shining. See the Ferris wheel out there, Navy Pier. It's just absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, it is. It's a perfect day and a great day to talk taxes because it is always on people's minds. And look, I think right around November is when people go, oh boy, 2021's almost over.
I know. 2022
is around the corner. Are there decisions right now we need to be making to get ready for tax season? I know it's still a little bit away. We're still earning here in 2021, hopefully. But there are little things we can be doing, right?
Yeah, definitely. You know, everyone had their eye on what Congress was doing to see what was going to be in the Build Better Back plan. And a lot of the proposed changes that were being talked about for months and months didn't really come to fruition. I mean, who knows ultimately what still may happen. But at the end of the day, there's probably less planning that may have needed to be done than what currently is, but there's absolutely still tips and tricks, things to think about. For starters, those that aren't itemizing their deductions aren't normally looking at their charitable contributions. They say, well, if I was itemizing my deductions, I'll look at that. But over the last 2 years, you've been able to actually take a bonus, sort of a bonus deduction, $300 it was for 2020, and actually up to $600 in charitable contributions. If you make them to a 501c3, you get to take them even though you're not itemizing your deductions this year.
So what you're saying is if you take the standard deduction, you're thinking, oh, it doesn't matter whether I get a charity or not. No, you got a little extra leeway on that, or an extra little bonus deduction you could take.
Absolutely. So if you give this year, you'll see that reward even if you're just taking the standard deduction and not itemizing.
Well, that's a great way to get involved there. $300, okay.
Yeah. Something else to think about, looking at your capital gains, capital losses towards the end of the year, make sure that if you have some capital gains and you have some securities that are in a loss position, you can always sell. Try to make sure you don't owe any additional capital gains taxes at the end of the day if you're looking to get out of those positions.
So like an underperforming stock that you have in your E-Trade account or something like that you're like, you know what, I want to be done with this. Do it before the end of the year so it turns out as a negative instead of a positive.
Absolutely. That negative can help offset another positive you have so you don't actually owe any taxes if you're planning on dropping that stock anyways.
Makes sense. You brought up the you got one more for us here quickly?
Well, something else to monitor. Again, we talked a little bit about the Build Better Back, and one of the things that is valued right now potentially is to put back in the state and local tax deductions. So we talked briefly about those that were not itemizing their deductions. For those that will be, you probably realize that there's been this $10,000 cap on state and local tax deductions over the last 4 years. There's a proposal to increase that to an $80,000 cap if this does pass. So keep an eye on that. Hopefully that Congress will let us know well in advance at the end of the year. But something to think about there is if you owe any sort of estimated quarterly taxes to the state and you would normally pay it in January, if you can accelerate that to pay by the end of December, that would count as a state income tax paid by the end of the year. It would increase your itemized deductions if that passes, of course.
Okay, so if they, and the current guideline they think is maybe by the end of November, they'll have something. If they pass it and that SALT deduction is going to go up to 80, get it in here in 2021 is what you're saying.
Absolutely, if you can.
All right, okay. On that note, I just want to, because we've been talking all day about BIF, the bipartisan infrastructure bill that the House passed last night, and it will be signed by President Biden probably this week is the plan. This is the hard infrastructure. So everyone out there that's saying, I can't believe all these social programs got through, don't worry, you're going to have your time to argue. That is the next part of the plan. This is a lot of pothole repair, highway repair, airport repair, things that are happening at our ports. 19 Republican senators voted for it. 13 House Republicans voted for it yesterday, a rather bipartisan bill. Does this have any tax implications for everyday folks?
I mean, the major thing that we're seeing for our practice area, one of the areas we're heavily involved in is cryptocurrency. And within this bill, there was some language regarding certain regulation of cryptocurrency brokers. It would require a more complete reconciliation of transactions that happens with brokers. The issue is that the definition of brokers within the bill itself is incredibly, incredibly broad. And there's some concern in the cryptocurrency community that it might ensnare some small businesses, even individuals that are there perhaps mining some sort of coin to make them have to report where they've previously never had to and may not have the capabilities to do so. So that is one area to see how the Treasury interprets this bill. There were also some other provisions that may require some more formal KYC type, know your customer type reporting for transactions over $10,000, which in the cryptocurrency space, which is much more about privacy, it's going to make it very difficult or somehow near impossible to report accurately given how transactions currently occur. So it'll be very, very interesting to see how Treasury interprets what this bill has to say and the type of language that the cryptocurrency community needs to be mindful of moving forward.
Yeah, because the Senate passed the bipartisan bill, and I remember there was a last-minute snafu about this cryptocurrency. There was a big push, and then they decided to pass it without fixing it, and they said the House would do it. But the House didn't do it. No. The House passed a clean Senate bill, sending it to Joe Biden. So it'll be the Treasury Department that kind of analyzes the language and actually then enacts policy based on that language.
And we're going to have to see what they come up with, correct?
Okay. Well, it wouldn't be a bill in Congress if there wasn't some confusion passed. So for a lot of people that are wondering about Build Back Better, here's where that stands now is a big question mark. Because the House yesterday, and there was a lot of confusion on this, the House basically passed a rule to start the debate on Build Back Better. The Senate has not passed the Build Back Better. Build Back Better is universal pre-K for people under a certain amount of dollar amount, 7% maximum on child care for any person in the United States, Medicare for hearing capabilities, a lot of more socially based programs. As of right now, that has not passed the House, that has not passed the Senate, but it could be over the next couple weeks. That could have some tax implications, but it's really hard to report on because even as you and I were talking before we came on, it changes every day because we do not have solid language on this yet.
It's constantly changing. I mean, some of like we mentioned before, some of the larger tax items that were in consideration, the changing tax rate tables, the taxing of unrealized gains, the billionaire's tax, these things aren't in the current iteration of,
right,
of what we're looking at, but what were, you know, have been ideas that have been thrown out. So it's much more palatable from a tax perspective now in terms of changes, but again, to your point, who knows what ultimately will wind up passing.
Yeah, the unrealized tax, unrealized gains tax, really threw everyone for a loop when it was proposed by, I believe, Oregon Senator Ron Wyden a couple weeks ago. And what it would have been is not for most people, but it would have been people that make over $100 million or have over $100 million in the account or make over $1 billion a year, that, hey, if you make a bunch of gains on these accounts, these stocks that are just sitting there, even if you don't sell the stock, you're going to have to pay some sort of tax on it. Well, for everyone that continues to complain about this, it's not in the bill anymore. It hasn't happened. And I imagine, and just, you know, just not even not from a not, not from a political perspective, Michael, but how hard would that have been to figure out as a tax professional?
I hadn't even begun to think about that, John. I don't want to have to think about it. But yes, in terms of taxing unrealized gains and the reporting on that and relying on clients to basically be able to bookkeep and share where they are and where they started. I mean, that would have been a logistical nightmare.
Right. Well, for right now, you don't have to worry about that. And as of right now, we don't have BBB. And the earliest it would come, the House is waiting for what's called a CBO score, a Congressional Budget Office score, to kind of analyze how much of it really is paid for. How much will this cost? Then the House will act. Then maybe the Senate. We'll see. But anyways, we'll get to that stuff in the next couple weeks. Tell you what, Michael, you cool taking some phone calls here today?
Let's do it.
312-981-7200. We can talk more about end of the year planning. But any tax planning questions you have, if it's personal, if it's business, Michael will do his best to either answer it now or follow up with the right answer a little bit later. Michael Raff from Gordon Law Group, how can people reach you directly? What's the best way to get a hold of you?
Absolutely. Gordon Law Group. Give us a call, 847-581-6951.
Say it again, because I couldn't write it down that fast.
847-581-6951. GordonLawGroupLTD.com.
312-981-7200. That's our phone number. We'll take some of your calls and plenty more questions with Michael Raff here on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association, joined by Michael Raff from Gordon Law Group. I'm going to ignore the fact, Michael, that you essentially just called me a nerd during the commercial break.
Oh.
I saw the look in your eyes as I was going on and on about Biff and BBB. And the fact that I just can't stop reading about it. Let's go to Bill in Kingston to save me. Bill, what's your question here for Mr. Raff?
Yeah, so I had purchased some crypto in the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
And I had made a pretty good profit. And so I was trying to figure out what I should do for my taxes. And I got a hold of a new accountant. And she advised me to pay 15% up front as soon as possible. Otherwise, I'd be penalized 5% on my profits each month. Hmm. Is that accurate?
Well, I think maybe what your accountant was advising you to do is to make sure that you've paid in enough in estimated tax payments before the end of the year, to make sure if you have gains during the year that you don't get penalized for failure to make estimates. You're supposed to pay sort of as you go along if your income is over certain thresholds or once you've reached a safe harbor. The 5% penalty that she referenced, I'm not sure. Sometimes there's a 5% penalty if you fail to file your taxes, and that could be that. But generally speaking, you're gonna report your total capital gains, both long-term and short-term, when you file your 2021 tax return in April next year. And you're going to pay taxes if it sounds like you held this cryptocurrency for less than a year. So you're going to pay what's called...
I actually invested like $400 and made $35,000 in 6 months.
Well, that's a wonderful ROI there, and I might have to get your number after.
Yeah, Bill, you owe me 15%. Forget the government. My goodness.
I've made sick money this year on crypto.
So wait, was it within 1 year though, Bill, in the calendar year?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I bought the coin last year in like December or November. And then I sold it off in like April of this year.
Well, congratulations to you, Bill. And what the government is going to thank you with is ordinary income tax rates on that gain. So it sounds like you made roughly about $35,000, your profit, less your cost basis of $400, so around $35,000. And basically, that gain is going to be netted against other short-term gains you have or potentially another long-term gains. But if you didn't have anything else, essentially that $35,000 is going to be taxed at ordinary income rates, just like it was part of your wages or interest dividends, some other form of income that you had for the year. So in terms of your accountant's advice, she's trying to help you get caught up with your estimates so you don't get caught flat-footed when you get your tax bill next year.
And that's the reason I called her. So is 15% enough? Because that's less than my taxable rate on my income, right?
I don't know what your taxable rate on your income is, but at the same time, she's probably trying to help you make sure that you're in line a little bit with what the taxes were that you paid in 2020. So you meet what's called a safe harbor test. You're absolutely right. It is very possible that your tax rate is higher than 15%, and you may owe. A bit when you go to file, but I think she's trying to get you to the point where you don't get penalized for failing to prepay. It also sounds like you're calling. Did you say you're calling from Washington?
No, Kingston, Illinois.
Kingston, Illinois. I don't know where I got Washington. I apologize. Then you're going to also be looking at the state income tax rate, which is roughly about 5%.
Ah, that's how they get you, Bill.
Yeah, you gave a lot of it back. I wasn't happy cutting those checks, but.
Hey, but you turned $400 into $35,000. So my question for you is, Bill, where are you taking me to lunch?
This is still going. I bought another one 5 weeks ago, and I'm up $10,000 on it already.
Bill, I'm calling you. Iridian, write down Bill's number. I'm going to call him before. I don't even get what cryptocurrency is, but I'm going to have whatever Bill's having. Hey, Bill, thanks for the phone call. We appreciate it.
All right, thanks.
All right. Hey, one question I want to ask Michael, not to go back to Biff versus BBB, but in this yet to be done legislation, who knows if it will be, Build Back Better, part of the way it's paid for, because no one that's making less than $400,000 allegedly is going to have to pay a single dime in taxes. That seems to be the case. But one of the ways they're going to pay for it is by the IRS magically in some way coming up with $400 billion extra dollars in revenue.
Yeah.
Does that seem likely to you? Like, how does that work?
I mean, well, they're going to, before they can magically come up with this revenue, they're proposing giving the IRS $80 billion to come up with more revenue. And I can see that, how that could work. Because if you look at the IRS over the past 10 years, their enforcement activity has been just declining year over year. There's retirements, there's outdated technology, there's significant inability for the IRS to keep up with the sort of most modern times to catch those that owe the most taxes. And so what the BBB proposes is to give them about $80 billion to increase those enforcement activities, more audits of high wage earners or high income earners, I should say, better enforcement tools, better technology to help detect, in addition to helping with taxpayer services, which is also lacking. But yes, I can understand and see a scenario where collections are much more rampant, audits go back up as opposed to declining. And so therefore, it's really important that in anticipation of this, you know, you keep the same tax records you've always been keeping, but keep them, you know, go back 3 years, 6 years for your businesses. Just keep everything open, even though the statute of limitations is typically 3 years. I advise to keep tax records for about six. And be prepared. If they do get this money, if this bill passes, there will be more enforcement activity.
I was just going to say, like, I think a lot of people are like, yeah, you know what? Go after those high income earners who have dodged taxes, maybe not illegally so, but are skirting the line. And then you're going to get audited and go, wait, hold on. But not me. Not you, Michael. I just meant the collective you. Hey, we're almost out of time. Who do you want? Who's the perfect person to call you? Is it someone that has a question about a past tax return that they might have messed up, maybe didn't file? Or is it someone that's looking ahead, or really anybody?
Yeah, we really do taxes, right? I'm the director of the tax department. We have tax controversy, tax planning, tax opinions. Sound like Bubba Gump, you know, with the different tax this, tax that. But the point is, anything related to taxes, we really can help. And yes, in terms of controversy, if you're in the middle of an audit or anticipating of an audit, or post-controversy collections work, either with the IRS or Illinois Department of Revenue, please do give us a call. We're more than happy to help.
Personal and business?
Absolutely. Personal and business.
All right. The phone number is 847-581-6951. That's 847-581-6951. And the website, Michael, is?
GordonLawLTD.com.
GordonLawLTD.com. Hey, we'll have to talk about this stuff again, Michael. Maybe we'll have BBB by the next time you come on in.
Sounds like a plan.
And we'll chat it all here on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association.